Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Game of Thrones on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're going to do our spoiler section for the 702 podcast. Aaron, I hear you have crazy theories.
I hear
you're going to indulge in all the speculation this week. Your plan is to make this a 9-hour podcast.
Here's the thing. fucking leaks, man. I guess that there. So I realized after last week's podcast that since I don't know the leaks myself, that I'm very susceptible for people sneaking leaks in that I wouldn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And so occasional contributor to Bald Move and constant wife of mine, Cecily.
She is constant.
It's never relentless, never ends. She has agreed to, because she's already went ahead and spoiled herself, she's agreed to pre-weed out my emails from stuff that people are trying to pass her speculation off as. And that's the other thing. It's the other thing that really sucks. There's a lot of gray area where, you know, I've seen time and time again where people naturally get very close to a solution as part of the speculation process.
Yeah.
And now you've got these points where, like, anyone that flies even too close to those particular suns is going to get their wings clipped. But it's tough. It sucks. I really wish the production leaks hadn't happened because it feels like it's constraining the discussion already.
Yeah. So what you're saying is in the following weeks, we will only be discussing theories that are obviously wrong.
I mean,
if you have leaks,
see, isn't that dumb?
Yeah,
like I don't know any other way to do it.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, I feel you. That's a tough problem to solve.
Right. The other thing it would be to consider them as. I mean, I just don't know. I don't know, but it's a frustrating theory. The frustrating week because there's another thing. Like I got deluged with this frozen sea theory, where. Someone, I think, you know, obviously they had to do this maliciously, but they took a screenshot from season one, episode one, intro of the wall, the little mock-up, little clockwork model.
Okay.
And they showed the comparison to the same scene in season six, episode one, and like, look, the sea is not frozen in this one, and the sea is frozen in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And my first clue that there's some bullshit afoot is that they weren't exactly the same shot. Like the first shot was obviously a second or two further or out of the zoom.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the time to actually go, and I wish I actually took the time to screenshot this and just post it on Reddit to defeat it once and for all. But anyway, the theory is like, oh, look, they're showing that, you know, that the sea's now frozen. The White Walker is going to be able to just walk around the wall. So first of all, if that actually comes out to be true, because I'm going to disprove this visual evidence, but I'm not going to disprove the theory. I don't know if the theory is correct or not. I hope it's not true, because if it turns out that the White Walkers can just make it so cold the ocean freezes and they walk around the wall, how fucking stupid does that make the wall?
Really stupid. It also raises questions about why they didn't do that at Hardhome when Jon was running away to the sea.
Like maybe they need time to freeze the sea over, but
maybe.
And that's the other thing. Like, and people like I saw discussions of like, well, that's the thing. They put that scene in to make you think it can't happen. I'm like, well,
then that. I hate that kind of storytelling.
Like that's some terrible stuff. But anyway. Yeah. It's very clear that if you show this thing side by side, it's the exact same scene. It's just as the camera pulls back, it goes through like a thin cloud layer. Mm-hmm. And they're passing off that thin cloud layer as ice. And you can see that same effect when they go through Dorne. I'm pretty sure the fucking Summersea does not have ice in it at this stage in the game. Like, I saw this, like, big websites were posting it and going crazy with theories and stuff on it. And I'm like, this literally would take 5 seconds to debunk.
Yeah.
But a bunch of people sent it in to me. It was over Reddit in some places. Again, maybe they do freeze the sea and walk. I'm not crazy that theory.
Mm-hmm.
I reserve the right to be impressed with it in retrospect because they have some kind of unique take on it. But it seemed it's busted. It's busted from the intro angle. And I don't like it even if it wasn't. Also, I felt like that we muddied the water when we were talking about this Euron shipbuilding stuff and the jetpacking, and I felt like we should make like an official statement on this, that we have long said that we don't really care about the whole jetpacking, and I'm not interested in like figuring out how long it's going to take to go from one location to the other unless they make it super obvious that like, well, we have to let the queen know by tomorrow, and Jon Snow is saying that at Winterfell, and then tomorrow comes, and he's standing in front of Cersei, and he's like, there's right. no fucking way you can get from Winterfell to King's Landing in a day. Mm-hmm. But very rarely do they set those time expectations, because you can always think that, like, in between episodes, weeks have passed, or months have passed, or whatever.
Yeah.
And also, I'm inclined to cut them some slack, because... you know, George Martin left his toys scattered all over his bedroom, and the Double D's are trying to bring them back into the toy box.
Right.
And jetpacks are involved. But with the Euron thing, I think that's the perfect example where they say, build me 1,000 ships. And even if you want to say that he's including the entire fleet of the Ironborn minus his best ships, whatever those are, mm-hmm. if he's including every canoe and rowboat and man in a life vest... and even if you give him 3 to 4 months, and even if you account for, there's this historical example of the Venetian arsenal, where I guess they're able to crank out a war galley a day.
What?
So these war galleys are much smaller. You know, they're just essentially rowboats. Like think of like the
oh,
like,
okay.
like these long boats with like, you know, oars and stuff. But they used a you can look it up. It's called the Venetian.
It's clearly not the ships we saw.
It's not the ships we saw, but you can look it up. It's called the Venetian Arsenal, and I guess they used their canals as a form of primitive assembly line standards, because all the craftsmen with their tools would stay in one position, and they'd float mm-hmm. the boats past, and they did their little bit. And so, but even then, so like, okay, to build 1,000 ships, you would need a minimum of 3 years at Venetian, you know,
speed.
Yeah. All right. And we're talking about much bigger, more impressive ships.
Yeah.
So I just felt like that was a bigger... And also, where are they getting the natural resources? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Venice was extremely wealthy back in the day, and it built a big empire based on trade, had lots of money, lots of natural resources. And, you know, where's the Ironborn get it? They're from these poor islands that are essentially rocks in the sea. Where are they getting the... I just felt like that was a fundamentally more serious thing. So it's like, I'm not... Yeah. I don't think it the jetpacking bothers us so much as when they make other kind of like gaping errors. So
yeah, because essentially when he says, "Build me a thousand ships," he's saying, "Let's take 5 years and get 1,000 ships together."
Right.
Like let's take the amount of time it would take to build 1,000 ships mm-hmm. and do this thing. And when there's kind of that, you know, unspoken amount of time there. Mm-hmm. It's essentially like John saying, I need to meet with Cersei tomorrow.
Exactly. And it's just like, he could have said 100 ships, and I probably wouldn't have said a thing.
Uh-huh.
But 1,000 ships is just crazy to do in 6 months.
Yeah.
Or even a year.
And we know that, you know, Yara took a good chunk of the ships
and
because it was able to transport all of the Unsullied, all of, well... at least a good chunk of Dothraki,
right?
If not 100,000 of them,
right? Right, and you know, the fact that they took the best ships, and that now he shows up with these ships that are so much bigger and powerful than the best ships that he had. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like that's certainly something. And it's not. And what I'm saying is, I'm already giving them jetpacking, and I know a lot of fans have already said that's bullshit, and it's interfering with my ability to enjoy the show.
Right.
They have to tread carefully, because the more you don't sweat those details, the more you get those details wrong, the more people lose their suspension of disbelief. Mm-hmm. And I've seen time and time again that once your suspension of disbelief snaps, suddenly things that you were ready to look over are glaring flaws that you can't even enjoy anymore. So. Yeah. I try not to be that podcast, because I feel like that's not fun listening to just harp on and on about, okay, we've acknowledged the jetpacks. Now every single episode that uses jetpacks, we're going to fucking bitch about it for 10, 15 minutes.
Right.
If you want that, listen to our Walking Dead podcast. all right. Another one that I saw floating around, because I'm trying to talk about these theories that I've seen on the front page of the Game of Thrones subreddit on Reddit, because I know those mods ride pretty hard against production spoilers.
Okay.
So that's one of the ways I'm trying to triangulate and say, okay, well, if it was discussed heavily on this, there's the idea that this grayscale could be used as a biological weapon against the White Walkers.
Okay.
White Walkers are human in origin. Mm-hmm. Presumably they share some kind of physiology with us, right? If obsidian is part of the cure, like if you have to grind up in obsidian, and we know that any obsidian just touches the White Walkers and they explode into crystal, could you infect the White Walkers with grayscale that would be fatal to them, and there's no way for them to cure because the cure is also fatal? What do you like? What do you think about that idea?
I think it's making a lot of assumptions that White Walkers are very similar to human beings because.
Okay, so
I don't know where to come down on this because the thing that created them in the first place is the very thing that kills them now.
You're right.
I'm torn, like, how to feel about that. And so when you start saying, oh, they're so much like us, I'm like, well, they've been through a process that fundamentally changed them in a lot of ways.
Do you know who else is torn?
What?
Jorah. And he knows exactly how to feel about it.
Yeah, he feels pretty bad.
You're right. And also, like, the fact I'm saying they're human in origin, that's true, but you're talking about a magical transformation process.
Right.
So, and you're talking about a show and a book series that has shown very little kind of, like, scientific accuracy when it's talking about genetics and heritability of traits and things like that. So, maybe you're right.
I mean, I don't know. It's.
I thought it was a cool theory, but you're right. As soon as you start talking about it, it's like maybe it falls apart. What do you think about the idea that Littlefinger? Oh, we're talking about like how is he going to twist up Sansa? But what if instead he starts trying to divide the Lords of the North and the Lords of the Vale?
Okay.
Like he gets them fighting amongst themselves to where he can't detach his army from Jon's and withdraw his support. But it's almost like, well, you know, it just didn't. I tried Sansa. It just didn't work out. And then he takes the Knights of the Vale. Or maybe he uses that as a pretext to take Winterfell to try to get back into Cersei's good favor.
Yeah, so I'm really open to a lot of stuff on Littlefinger right now because, like I've been saying, I know he's got another pivot. He's not quite done yet. That could be it. I mean, that seems like a way to go for him.
Right.
When you know, he's been roadblocked on Jon and he's been roadblocked on Sansa.
Right.
Where else can he turn? Well, the other Lords of the Vale. Or the other Lords of the North.
Because I did get a lot of my emails, the theme of you guys are underestimating Littlefinger. You're committing the sin of underestimating Littlefinger, which traditionally doesn't go well for people.
Look, this is a guy who's made it this far, right?
Uh-huh.
He's climbed the ladder of chaos this far. I think he's got one more move left, but at some point, it's got to come crushing down on him. That's just the symmetry
exactly.
of the story.
And that's where I think that's where our rejoinder was. Like, well, we might be underestimating Littlefinger, but unless you think he's going to survive to the end,
yeah,
he is going to have to. I mean, there's not that many episodes left in the whole series. So, like, you know, whether it's next episode or seven from here, he either makes it to the end of the series, which you got to decide whether you think that's likely or not. Do you think that's in line with what George Martin is trying to do? Is that the type of story he's telling? Or he's going to fuck up and get himself into a giant personal downfall.
Right. I lean toward the latter.
Right. Right. And it's really tough to see, like, you know, well, how's he going to divide Jon and Sansa? But maybe we're looking at it from, you know, the top down instead of the bottom up. The other thing I got a lot of questions about was the idea of communications. Because people are like, why hasn't the Wall notified Winterfell the fact that Jon's brother is here? And there's a couple of lines you could, you know, you know, Daenerys know that Euron's launching a fleet against her, or how come, you know, but also how does Jon know or how does Sam know that Jon's at Winterfell and not back at the Wall? And there's a couple of arguments. You could just be like, well, number one, it could just be a plot hole or production error. Two, it could be that, you know, the fact that the timelines aren't in sync.
Right.
Like that they showed Bran coming at the Wall, but maybe that hasn't happened yet from Jon's perspective. I don't know how I was trying to think of like a holistic way to look at the shows. And I started thinking about like who has maesters and who has ravens, because at the Wall, we know they don't have a maester.
Right.
Like Dolores Ed is a commoner. Probably not literate. Almost no one that wasn't a lord or lady or their immediate household was literate back in these days.
Yep.
So,
however, Bran and Mira both would be.
They would be, but yeah. Do they know how to work ravens? I mean, I guess like Bran could just warg into a raven and in real time fly to Winterfell with a message.
Probably,
but
yeah.
They've said that that's a skill. Like, you know, mm-hmm. Being able to do that is kind of a skill. So maybe the wall is like temporarily cut off from communication since they don't have anyone to write the messages or anybody to wrangle the ravens. Mm-hmm. And that would also apply to Danny. Like anything that's connected to the Citadel is going to be reasonably well informed.
Yeah.
Because you know that's where everything's kind of travels through there. So it doesn't surprise me that the Maesters would know that John has taken Winterfell.
Right.
Because they have a Maester at Winterfell who would report that thing immediately to them.
Yeah.
It doesn't surprise me that Dany wouldn't be plugged in that network because she's a foreign agent. And it's not like the I mean, maybe they will eventually be like, hey, here you're a power player. We have this thing where we give Maesters to everybody.
It's like becoming an iTunes partner. They send us an iTunes employee and we get to...
Right. Right. And they just keep an eye... They just advise us, keep an eye on us.
Yep.
So Dany, she would be limited to whatever spies Varys has,
yep,
and vice versa with Cersei. People ask, like, because Cersei and Qyburn were talking about, you know, the fact that they heard that Drogon got wounded in the fighting pits of Meereen, and like, well, how could they know that? And I'm like, well, that's like if something went down in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Like how long when and even without cameras, if you just had like 100,000 people watching some spectacle and you know something went down, how long would it take for the telephone effect and for your spies? And like I feel like that's no problem. Like that literally happened 2 seasons ago. There's more than enough time for Qyburn to have heard from informers and rumor mongers and newspapers of the day that the dragons can be wounded that way.
I'm with you.
So essentially, whenever you're talking about complaining about communication struggles in Westeros, think about who has ravens, who doesn't, who can read, how long does it take for that info to travel, how many people possessed information in the first place, because that's a difficulty modifier. And I feel like it mostly makes sense when you think about it from that angle.
Yeah, I think so. I haven't had a lot of problems with the time to communication kind of stuff.
And to the extent that we're talking about, like, wrap a neat bow about the Euron Greyjoy thing, about the jetpacking thing, about this communication thing, like, I saw this theme on Reddit especially, but also in a mailbag. It's like the show has gone to shit because they don't sweat those details anymore. Hmm. And my question is, has the show gone to shit or has the source material gone to shit? Because the source material is not even there anymore.
Oh, right. That's fair.
You know what I'm saying? Like George has all of the heroes flung to the far corners of the earth. There's several cliffhangers, and then that is the situation you get. So, like, even if you're not happy about it, why are we blaming the double Ds necessarily? I mean, certainly they are not perfect, and they do shit that I don't agree with. But, you know, as I've said it once, I've said it a million times, they didn't sign up to write George Martin fan fiction.
Yeah.
So I think they're doing the best they can do. Because at some point, they've got to just take – I mentioned this on the Instant Podcast. They have to put their own spin on this. And there's lots of times where I'm looking at the behind-the-scenes shows, and they're talking frankly about, oh, when we were approaching writing this with Arya, we had the thing. And so like they're just making up a lot of this stuff.
For sure.
And kind of doing the – and that's distressing to me. Because I've every single time that they've gone away from Martin's work, I've disliked it or liked it less, misliked it, as George would say. And to the extent that they kind of like faithfully adapt to novels, everything works out fine. But here's a situation where they just ran out of novels. What are they going
to
do?
Yeah, and I guess I would say it's probably fair to say, hey, the show isn't as tightly plotted and as carefully crafted as it used to be, but I think that's out of necessity. Like, it can't be. Because if you think about it, like, George Martin has years to come up with the intricate plots that he comes up with for the books.
Right.
They have, at best, a year and a half, like, to shoot
to
everything,
write it, to write it,
to do
people.
George's job times three, at least. So, like, I agree. Yes, it maybe is not quite as tightly plotted, but also, how much can you really blame them?
Right.
This is a truly epic show, and I don't think, I don't want to put too much blame on somebody who's trying to do their best with the material they didn't expect not to have.
Right,
at this
right.
point.
Is there some kind of term we can come up with, Martin, like Kinslayer or Kingslayer, like that signifies this kind of like the fact that he's kind of let us down or like maybe breached our collective trust? Like, is there a like a, is he the hype slayer? Is he the time killer? George, the you know, no man's as cursed as the time killer.
We'll have to mull that one over. Maybe our audience can help us out with that.
Yeah. I also think as like this the famous was it Neil Gaiman that said that like George Martin's not your bitch when people were originally complaining years ago about how long it's taken, like is that his House Martin's words, there's we are not your bitch.
Yeah. For sure.
I'm saying he's a time killer though. The other theory I wanted before we got to the listener stuff, the other theory I kind of want to gently explode is there's this people talking about how it's I'm going to call it John the Unburnt, where John's going to go to Dragonstone. He's going to treat with Dany.
Okay.
He's not going to bend the knee.
She's
going to go fly into the Roth. She's going to feed him to the dragon fire, and it's not going to hurt him because he's secretly a Targaryen and he's not going to melt.
Okay.
There's one problem with this theory. We've seen Jon be burnt in the first season when that white was attacking Gyor, Mormont. He grabbed a hot lantern to like throw the fire on him, and that actually burnt his hand. And it was a plot point that his hand was injured throughout that season.
Huh. Okay.
So I know they've not ever done that with Dany. Like, you know, that she's been fireproof throughout the whole series. And I also know just because the other thing I got to keep in mind is their audience is twice as big as it was last year. So at least one out of two of you have never heard any of this stuff before.
Sure.
But there's a difference. Like, George Martin was pretty adamant that Targaryens aren't fireproof. It's just that this was a one-time magical event, kind of blood magic thing with Dany surviving the fire. Now, the Double D's during their adaptation from the very beginning made Dany being fire resistant or fireproof a plot point that then paid off in season 6 where she set the whole Khalasar's big house.
Yeah.
The big house. The mansion.
The big house.
The crib.
What they call it.
The cow's crib is what they call it. And so I don't know. The thing is I guess if they do go with this where John's going to, you know, again, walk out naked from fire and then they're going to be like, oh, googly eyes, they got to explain how he burnt his hand on a fucking lantern.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean,
maybe he's only resistant to dragon fire, like a true Targaryen.
What about, was it Viserys? Is that Dany's brother's name?
Yeah.
I mean, he essentially got killed by heat.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, it's clear to me that it's not a Targaryen thing, it's a Dany thing.
Right, right.
Being the mother of dragons.
Right. Because that's the mechanism for dying by gold. It's heat. The heat.
Unless it covers your mouth and nose. But it didn't. That wasn't it. Yeah.
Right.
So, I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen that way.
Okay.
And also, it would diminish my respect for Dany quite a bit if literally she comes over here and this guy who's telling her, like, hey, there's a really important threat up north that you need to know about.
And has come to her summons and is there as a guest.
And is as level-headed and cool about things as John has shown himself to be. And she just burns him up. I'd be like, God, well, fuck. I don't want you to sit on the throne either.
But, I mean, we've been talking about how there might be some signs of Dany being, you know, kind of a mad queen type of character. So it is something on the table. But I feel like that would be... Presumably that's going to happen this episode or next. Mm-hmm. And if she just up and burns John for no reason, that would be such a huge swing for her.
And I'm not saying like, oh, it can't happen for that reason. I'm saying I don't want it to happen for that reason.
Right, right. Yeah. Okay.
Because I'm still rooting for Dany to be a good queen.
Is there anything else you want to talk about before we get to the feedback?
No, I don't think so.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre, We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald maneuvers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. First two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
I want to take a break to talk about some things going on at Bald Move this week. We dropped a lot of content in the last few days between the full cast and the spoiler edition. We dropped an episode of The Empire Business talking about the behind-the-scenes details of advertising, which is for club members only, but I just want to let people know about that. It's interesting. We also did a first-run Bald Movie last night. We saw an advance of Atomic Blonde. And we talked about our general thoughts about the movie and some upcoming trailers. And then we got spoilery for the club members. And also, I had a long conversation about Twin Peaks, the first two seasons. I never got into Twin Peaks. I got into it because of a commissioned podcast. And then I tried to rapidly inhale the first two seasons and the movie Firewalk with me so I could get into the new Showtime show. If you're interested in Twin Peaks at all, me and Shane talk about our histories with the show and what it was like, because he was in college when it was big back in the day, and talk about watch parties and theory crafting. And, you know, it was the Game of Thrones of its day. He said that like 60 million people watched it at its peak.
Ugh.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, I wish we'd been podcasting it.
Nokia, I wish podcasts were a thing. I wish you were out of primary school back then. Uh-huh. So we got all that stuff going on at baldmove.com this week. Next week, first run Bald Movie, I know, is going to be The Dark Tower. That's exciting to a lot of people, so be looking out for that. Also, I want to talk about the club, because the time to take advantage of the sale is fast drawing to a close. This is going to be done with July 31st. This might be the last time I get to tell you that we're having a 25% off sale in celebration of Game of Thrones for our club features. You can go to club.baldmove.com. It's all been Game of Thrones and Dragonfied. You click on the membership and make sure you apply the code GOT2017 at checkout, and you get 25% off. And also, that club page kind of previews all the different features that you can get. There's extra video content. There's extra audio ad content. There's ad-free podcasts, so you don't have to listen to us hawk suitcases and the club ever again. For one low price, you can get it, and all bunch of other bonus features. Club.baldmove.com. Act right now. Before the 1st of August, and you can get 25% off the yearly membership. Club.baldmove.com. Okay, well, the first one is we got a really good one. Travis M. from West Virginia. Are y'all aware of the Arbor Gold theory?
Oh, Jesus.
Are you aware of the Arbor Gold theory?
Does this have to do with the color of Arbor Gold?
No, it does not.
Okay.
I actually had never heard this one before. So he says, I think the statement in the show where Arya is through, as Walder Frey is talking about, drink up the Arbor Gold even though it's red, is a reference to another long-held fan theory that when someone says or mentions Arbor Gold, they're being tricky or deceitful, hiding their true motivations and their true self. We see this several times in the books where it's estimated to occur more than 20 times, and all of them during instances where people are lying, hiding, or disguising themselves or their intentions. Just three main examples. Wyman Manderly serving fries, likely filled with Freys, to the Boltons and Freys at Ramsay and fake Arya's wedding feast. "The best pie you've ever tasted, my lords," the fat lord declared. "Wash it down with Arbor Gold and savor every bite. I know I shall." This was... They mined this for the show when Arya served Walder Frey pies with fingers in them. Because in the books, the Wyman Manderly is the one that does it. He kills two Freys that were emissaries as soon as they leave their house to avoid his guest right obligations, and then bakes them into giant pies he serves at the Bolton wedding. Littlefinger spinning a tale to the Lords of the Vale, asking Sansa, pretending to be Elaine in the books, to serve them a cup of wine. "My lord, will you join me in the solar for a cup of wine, Elaine? Sweetling, come pour for us." A low fire burned in the solar where a flagon of wine awaited them. Arbor Gold, Sansa's filled Lord Nestor's cup while Peter prodded at the logs with an iron poker. So this is where he's lying, you know, we saw this in the show.
This is like a meta thing for the readers.
Yeah.
It must be, because like, you know, if you're trying to be deceitful and you bust out the Arbor Gold and it's kind of a known thing in Westeros,
yeah, you're right.
It's like, that's not going to work.
You're right. It's like,
hey,
wait,
you're
a
lying
second.
To me.
Yeah. Wait a second. This is like, it's like crossing your fingers in front of somebody.
Right.
It's like, you know, that's the social equivalent.
Uh-huh.
And he had the third thought where Alaris, who is widely rumored to be actually Sarella Sand as disguised as a boy at the Citadel, in a prologue to A Feast for Crows, though there were the dozen empty tables on the terrace, Leo sat by himself at theirs. "Buy me a cup of Arbor Gold, Hot Frog, and perhaps I won't inform my father of your toast." Here, if this, and there, this is another assumption. You're assuming that Alaris is Sarella, but she's in disguise and being deceitful, and she's talking about Arbor Gold.
Okay. So, yeah, I buy it. It sounds like it tracks through.
So now I've gone from like being mildly annoyed to kind of like impressed.
Uh-huh.
Because that's a pretty deep cut, and it's a deep cut that you're willing to alienate the 95% of the people who haven't seen the show or haven't read the books and have only seen the show.
You think so?
I don't, Pete. Yeah, if you're just watching this as a casual Game of Thrones, because it's just a, you know, it's you're not crazy like us.
Uh-huh.
You probably are not hearing Arbor Gold and seeing red wine and saying what the fuck,
right?
Or you can rationalize it in 100 different ways of like, well, maybe it's that's the name for the blue label stuff, or
yeah, okay, I like it.
Arbor Gold. I want their Arbor Platinum, old man. That's what I expect from Lord of the Riverlands. Okay, let's move on to Joe, the one true king, the self-styled one true king. Let's say the Dragonbinder is Euron's gift for Cersei. It would suck if they didn't introduce it in the King's Moot like they did in the books. Definitely missed opportunity. But anyway, he brings it to Cersei, and then what? We know from the books that anyone who blows it gets their insides turned to ash. That's not very helpful. They will need someone who is immune to fire or something like that, right?
So I feel like this is all dry pie, because the episode essentially showed us that the gift is Ilaria.
Yeah, it is. I was wanting to talk about this Dragonbinder just to kind of get it out of the way this season, because some things will keep coming up again and again and again unless we talk about it.
Yeah.
So I've told you about this a bunch of different times. Do you know roughly what I'm talking about?
The horn that controls the dragons. Allows you to control a dragon.
Yeah. Euron shows up at the King's Moot.
Yeah.
And instead of like he did in the show, where he just essentially gives a political speech, he just brings tons of treasure, and he also has this dragon that he has one of his men blow, and it makes this fiendish sound, and the horn starts glowing red with like old Valyrian runes, and the guy who blew it, his lungs get scorched and he dies.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot, like, in the books, there's a lot of speculation about, well, who could actually blow the horn without dying? Does the horn actually work? Is this some kind of bullshit magic trick? And there's, you know, but I just feel like I don't think there's room to introduce the horn. And as you said, they don't, a lot of the things that might be built up to control the dragons. For one thing, in the show, Dany doesn't have trouble controlling the dragons.
Right.
In the books, that's very much a question. How is she going to figure out how to use these full-grown adult dragons as weapons of war? So, like, I don't feel like the original need is there. And also some of the things that they've done to introduce characters who might be fire-resistant, like Victarion, who's got the weird smoky arm, maybe he's now conferred some kind of magical fire resistance. That shit's not in the series right now. And maybe You know, another popular theory is Jorah's going to have that crazy, like, fire Hellboy arm. But I don't know. It seems like they're going to go, the way they're flaying his skin off, they're going to go for, like, he's going to look fucked up, but I don't think he's going to look like a fucking, the thing that someone set on fire.
I mean, he might be pretty scarred up. His arm's like, looking pretty red under that.
Yeah,
that
I feel like if you flay your skin off and it heals, it's going to look like you've had like third-degree burns over the affected part, right? It's going to be all weird, and there's going to be keloid scarring and all that stuff. But I don't see him having like a magic arm at the end result of it.
Probably not. No.
Yeah. So, anyway, so I don't know. Like, there is one person who could blow a dragon horn in the show and have no problems. That's Dany.
Sure.
But again, Dany doesn't need the horn because it seems like she can just control the dragons now. Mm-hmm. Because she, I don't know. I still don't know. It's almost like, you know, the Drogon just decided that he was going to remember that she's his mom. Yeah. And she should be listened to, and the other dragons fell in line. Mm-hmm. So, Andrea R., you guys talked about this horn and how it's something to be, it's something that Euron has possessed and how weird it would be if they all suddenly make a plot point in a show. And I agree, but I can't recall this being discussed in your podcast, and forgive me if you covered it, but where is the horn that Samwell found with the Dragonglass cache in season 2? It was at the Fist of the First Men, where he, Grin, and Dolorous Ed were tasked with digging latrines. We know Samwell gave the Dragonglass to Jon, who left it at Hardhome, but we've never heard about that horn. Do we think Samwell still has it? Would it be too random for the writers to go back to that? Is it just a nod to book readers, or is it a plot hole?
I can't imagine after the journey that Sam has been on, he still has that thing. Because we see them kind of escaping from, was it Hornhill? Is that the name of his place?
Right.
His family's seat of power?
Yeah.
With essentially just Gilly, a baby, and a sword.
The clothes on their backs, yeah.
Yeah, so...
And before that, he didn't escape from the wall, but he, you know, they had very meager possessions coming over on the boat to Old Town.
So I really don't think he has it on him. As far as where it could be, could definitely be at Hardhome, which kind of eliminates it as a possibility for use.
Right.
I mean, when would it have gotten separated from the Dragonglass?
Well, and also, you also got to say, like, narratively... What is it supposed to be? Because in the books, there's this whole thing about this Horn of Jorimund, which is like this artifact that the king and the king beyond the wall had in the Age of Heroes, and it was rumored to be able to, you could blow it, and it's so loud it would actually knock down the wall.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose like if he took it up to Hardhome, guess he would have it now.
Right. But
so,
but the thing is, like, I don't think it's been seen since season 2. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to answer your question about is it a nod to book readers, is it a plot hole, I think it's somewhere between those two, because I think that there's a lot of evidence that the Double Ds were not sure of everything's significance in the beginning.
Right.
And they were hoping that, you know, because like George did drop Dance of Dragons in between season 1 and season 2. They thought as the picture developed that, you know, they would have a more, and they didn't want to like, oh, God, how are we going to introduce this thing and we've never seen it before? But as those things have kind of, those possibilities have been shut off, I feel like that they've been free to kind of like, you know, pare those things down. So, and also like, I mean, if he's got, I guess I still kind of think of from a casual viewer, if I'm watching this weekend's episode of Game of Thrones and I see a previously on that shows Sam finding the dragon glass, which is the big point of that scene. Mm-hmm. And then they also just show the horn laying there, and it's never, there's never a mention of it again. And I see in this episode the Night King come up with that horn and blow it and knock the wall down.
Right.
That would still feel like a what the fuck moment.
I largely agree with that, yeah.
Because there's not even dialogue establishing what the fucking horn is.
Right.
You know, there's a whole plot point in the books where the wildlings have said to have found the horn, and they got this giant horn that's made out of like a fucking, like an Urox, or maybe it was a mammoth tusk or something, and and they found in the tomb of a giant, and Mance is like using this as kind of a threat against the Night's Watch, and you find out later that in Tormund's opinion, it was just some horn they found, and he was bluffing the whole time. So, but they don't even have a line of dialogue establishing what it is, so like, the previously on can just show the horn, unless they highlight it and say, actually, Horn of Jorimund, asterisk, Jorimund, and like, it's like, how would they even explain that?
And then they would have to somehow connect the dots between that and the Night's King having it.
Yes, which they'd show the chain of custody, and
which they can't do because it wasn't in the show. So
yeah,
I do agree. It would probably be a what the fuck moment.
I feel like the horns are busted for the show. They're just not the
no
all
horns.
All horns. It's all dragons, no horns.
Yeah,
no waiting.
I think I'm with you on that.
All right. J.H., I was listening to your spoiler podcast and heard you guys speculating if the White Walkers had a language. While Aaron's idea of a gloating-based language is hilarious and Jim's idea of telepathic communication is actually a sweet idea, I wanted to direct your attention to the article below. It's an interview with the sound effects supervisor in the show, but at the very end, under the extra bits, it mentions this topic. Hmm. Although we never hear it, the producers did invent a language for the White Walkers to speak. It was called Scroth, but it wasn't a good fit for the creatures. Fairfield, the gentleman here mentioned, the sound supervisor, says they're just bigger than language. Language was demeaning for them to speak. It was beneath them. They were beyond that. It's something primal, mystical, and deep about that.
Okay.
Which I feel like lends into your telepathy.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. There's got to be some way that they communicate, whether it's just like a Borg-like sort of connection. That is sort of telepathy.
It's all, yeah.
If it's not technology-based.
Right, right.
So,
and
yeah.
There's also, that's kind of tropey for like those telepathic beings to be like, oh, we have to use your meat mouth to communicate.
Right.
It's like vomit in my mouth. You know, so it's like the way he's describing it being demeaning, it sounds very much like the up their ass telepath from Star Trek, you know?
Totally. And I'm with him. I think it's more frightening for them not to speak and yet somehow be able
to
coordinate.
It's like one of the scariest things about the aliens is they have no eyes.
Yeah.
But they can still find you.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, sometimes the absence of something is scarier than if they, you know, are doing a Moloch speak.
Yep.
Moving on. Cody L. I think we got a really nice tip in this past episode, 702, for who might be the Valonqar. The first few seasons, we constantly had people refer to Arya as a little boy, and I even believe Cersei herself ridiculed Arya about how she looked boyish, did boyish things, and refused to act like a proper young girl. On Sunday, we had Hot Pie make a reference to Arya that she no longer looks like a little boy, once again heating up the discussion that she used to resemble a boy. Seems only fitting that the Valonqar may be genderless, which also goes along with the prince that was promised, where in Valyrian, the term for prince has no gender. Figure that the Valonqar could be a similar term with no gender, and bada bing, bada boom, or continued dominance of female characters in the show continues. What do you think, man?
I really don't want this show to turn into a series of linguistic tricks.
Uh-huh.
But okay, I'll go there with you.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, so you think that if the Valonqar turns out to be a princess and not a prince... Or I'm sorry, if the prince that was promised turns out to be a princess, not a prince.
Well, if it's genderless, yeah.
And genderless, and the Valonqar is like that's...
And it's also that, and then like... But I mean, it sort of makes a bit of sense, right? Like, if the Valyrians are speaking this language that doesn't have
thing.
A lot of gender-based nouns and pronouns...
That's like saying it's bullshit that in Spanish you can tell who's male or female, whether they got an O or an A at the end. It's like, well...
Right, that's the language.
Right.
Like,
I get it. If the word for ma ends in an A... And then sisters, that's just too much, too coincidental to believe, you know?
And that's not the problem I have with it. The problem is, like, it feels like a writer being a writer at that point. Like, doing tricks just for a writer's sake. Like, playing with language to make the point.
And that's the thing. I don't think that Martin's above that. I really don't.
That's fine.
Yeah.
It's just not to my taste, but whatever.
Yeah.
And also, reasonable people can disagree.
I mean, I guess it's cool because it also... there's not nearly as much theory craft in the show as the books because there's not this kind of depth and complexity. And by introducing this, I feel like the show watchers can kind of play along because, like, oh, if we know that's true about this Valyrian word, then maybe it's – well, and that's the other thing is the Valonqar is not a show thing.
Right.
So
that's true.
I guess that's the thing where we're looking at the books to try to figure out what's going to happen on the show.
Are we sure that, like – Valar Morghulis doesn't actually mean all people must die.
Well, that's like, other things. Like, I mean, man in that case is like capital M humanity,
right?
Which
that's true.
You know, so I feel like that there's these camps that are starting to form up about like Jaime's going to be the Valonqar, or maybe Arya's going to be the Valonqar, or it's going to be Arya wearing Jaime's face for the ultimate. Is going to be the most Valonqariest Valonqar that ever valed a car.
So the angle that I do like it from is the idea that Arya has been presenting herself as a boy for
a long time,
a large chunk of this series,
right.
Which that sort of makes a satisfying, it sort of satisfies my craving for whatever kind of narrative pleasure I'm looking for here, that she could potentially be the Valonqar, even though leaving aside like the gender neutrality of the word, because she has been effectively like both sexes or presenting herself as both sexes, both genders rather.
Well, it's like the, you know, Eomer's sister from Lord of the Rings, where it's like, fool, no man shall kill me. And she rips off her helmet, lets her hair spill down. Like, I am no man. Like, it's like,
oh, the prophecy was right.
Right. In a very technical.
Yeah, they tricked me.
Technically, right's the best kind of right there is. Yeah.
I wish I had studied the language more.
So I don't know. I mean, I guess if I'm looking at Valonqar prophecy, I'm going with the rule of cool. Like Jaime killing Cersei and possibly to fulfill the thing that he did, you know, as a payoff to try, you know, as another Mad King he's killing. Mm-hmm. When Cersei's been fixated on Tyrion the whole time, I think that's sweet. From a narrative stand, that's a nice arc.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you had Jaime willing to kill children for Cersei to where he's now killing her for the good of the realm.
Right. It's super satisfying from all angles, essentially.
I do think if he kills her for purely personal reasons, that sweetness of the arc kind of fades away.
Yep.
And I hope the Double D's realize that. I would think so. But I've seen them get the weird nuance between Jaime and Cersei wrong before. You know, Arya killing would be kind of cool. Then you start looking at the Hound.
Right.
Like, the Hound would be... But again, there is no Valonqar prophecy, so the irony of him being the little brother killing her is already lost. And also, what is the personal connection there?
Mm-hmm.
Euron, he would be killing Cersei just as a means to end. It means nothing to Cersei.
Yeah.
So, after you get out from, like, Arya and Jaime, and Arya wearing Jaime's face, it starts to be like, yeah, fine, I can buy it. I could totally see it happening, but... Mm-hmm. You know, where is the satisfaction? Where is the payoff? What does that say about Cersei? What's that say about the Valonqar?
Mm-hmm.
What does it say about anything? Moving on to Steve. I have a question on prophecies now that we have confirmed the non-gendered promise royal offspring interpretation. Does this stop the belief that Azor Ahai, the promised prince, and the stallion that will mount the world as the same person? I forgot to throw in the stallion that mounts the world in the Azor Ahai prophecy.
Right, the prophecies that sort of get lumped together.
Yeah, it's another connection there. You can't really get any more gendered than a stallion mounting the world, at least not without Tyrion making a saddle of sorts. also, can we call bullshit on some of these prophecies? Okay, let's take this first. This is another. I got about a dozen emails like this where people are like, what if we're looking at this from the wrong angle? What if we're not talking about all these prophecies being about the same person, but what if these different prophecies are like some kind of there's each culture or group of people has their own hero that they'll come together like Voltron at the end? Like, there's not just a prince that was promised and Azor. They're all separate people.
Right.
The last here, they're all going to get together, and they're and each some of these major characters are going to slot into those roles, and it'll become you know, obvious in hindsight that they were all had their like savior role to play.
Yeah, that could be true.
Yeah, I haven't really thought of that because I've always gone the whole like this is like the mono myth. This is Noah's Ark. That's also Gilgamesh's epic. And
yep.
Because you're right, Stallion Mounted World. I know for a fact the stallions can't be both male and female.
Yeah, and it's in a different language, right? It's Dothraki as opposed to Valyrian.
Valyrian, right. Dothraki, I wouldn't think, would have a language where they just, you know, confuse women and men. And
I seriously doubt it with their culture.
Yeah. Although they do, well, anyway, I'm going to defend that. Anyway, can we also call bullshit on some of these prophecies? As it turns out, nearly all the prophecies in our real world of doom, second comings, and golden ages have been wrong, as can be. Religion could be considered the original fake news. Just hearing all that Game of Thrones prophecies makes me hope Cersei finds an ending of anything but that. Even quiet exile would be satisfying. What do you say to that?
Yeah, prophecies are not usually so accurate. Like,
right.
Maggie the Frog pretty much got it right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. In this world, this fictional universe, I tend to lend a little more credence to prophecy.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, if things were happening in our real world like they are in Game of Thrones, then are you not being, aren't you being unscientific to not at least grant the idea that there's some power that's behind the scenes that are making these prophecies come true, that are animating this mad? Like, if you see a shadow baby pop out of Melisandre's vagina, are you like, well, obviously that can't happen?
I mean, it would be
it's
foolish
supernatural.
not to at least investigate it, right? Like, to take the prophecy seriously enough to try and understand what could be at effect there.
And that's the thing about religious people. Like, I don't want to say something as inflammatory as, like, it's fake news, because I'm trying to run a business here. But also, you know, at best, you're talking about religious people have had – they're essentially the lone witness to some miraculous event, and that's the presence of God in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they say that they felt that, then – and we can't measure it, and there's multiple people saying the same thing, then you have to be at least open to the idea that, like, you know, essentially they can believe what they want. And you don't accept it as evidence because you're a skeptic and you're a rational person, but they also can't prove it. They're essentially, again, the lone survivor of some kind of miraculous event.
And unfortunately, there's no way to investigate that, right? There's no method for investigating a personal experience after the fact with no evidence. Yeah, that's a tough thing to do. With the prophecies, you can start to at least try and examine them.
Right.
Try and understand, like, okay, these are the predictions. How, like, I don't know. There's got to be some set of criteria. I'm not a scientist.
No, but, like, you know, Melisandre fucks Stannis. She gets a shadow baby. Melisandre burns four leeches of the royal blood, and four kings are predicted to be killed. She burns Shireen. The snow melts. Like, you know, she washes Jon Snow's hair and
he comes back to life.
Like,
yeah.
That, you know, Thoros of Myr can say a prayer over Beric Dondarrion and he comes back to life. Like, those are things. Now, so to the extent that, like, I'm actually on the other side of the fence from you, Steve, I actually think that if Cersei doesn't die, like, it's the one prophecy that was explicitly addressed on the show that doesn't come true, that would feel a little unsatisfying to me.
Yeah, I could see that.
If there was more, like, if this was more of a leftovers type show and there was actually doubt about, like, you know, you had a genuine conflict between the men of faith and men of science about whether this is true, and then you reveal that in the end all these things Cersei was shitting her pants about were things that kind of arguably she manipulated herself, and then she doesn't even die, she gets exiled or put in prison, that'd be super cool. But I don't think that's that story.
Yeah, no, I think the show has set itself up to say that the prophecies are real, and it's not about whether or not they'll come true, it's how they'll come true. Melisandre being the primary example. Like, she always sees something that's going to happen and misinterprets how it's going
to
happen.
Right. And also, you got to leave room for the god to be manipulating. Like, if I tell Melisandre the real deal, she'll go pull a Jonah on me and refuse to do it. So I'm going to lead her by the nose. And, you know, because, like, it's obvious that the red god is not like a Judeo-Christian god of mercy and love and forgiveness, or if he does, you got to be burnt alive at the stake to get it,
right?
And there's blood sacrifices, and it's a little dark. He's got a little bit more edge than the Old Testament God, especially after he had a kid and mellowed out. So, anything else to add to that?
No.
All right, let's move on to Nathan L. with a correction. The Archmaester Sam is studying with is Ebros, who is known in the books as an expert in medicine. Qyburn actually studied with him until he was kicked out. Okay. So I don't know how, because I watched this show three times, twice with subtitles, and my brain just helpfully filtered out this guy's name. But yeah, and Qyburn mentioned that the thing that got expelled is he started vivisecting people.
Oh, boy.
Because he wanted to see how the parts actually move and do all that, and he got kicked out. So he's not the Marwyn.
How is that much worse than what that guy was doing with Sam?
Well, but, I mean, he's actually trying to save the guy's life, I guess. If you're just vivisecting a person for information, you're killing a human life to learn something.
Oh, he's vivisecting live people?
That's what vivisection means, a dissection only when you're alive.
I thought it was, like, slicing people into thin...
Oh, yeah.
Thin
no.
layers
I don't
to
know.
See the...
Yeah, I know what you're... That, I don't know what that's called either.
Okay.
But, yeah, no, vivisecting implies that the person's still alive.
Oh, yeah, no, that's bad. Shame on you, Qyburn.
Okay. I thought it's like, oh, interesting. Jim's going to, you know, defend
in
Nazi...
In defense of vivisection.
Nazi medical research. All right.
No.
Um, But no, I think the important part there is he's definitely not Marwyn, who is the more warlocky of the Citadel Denizens, which makes me think, because after this episode, I started thinking, well, maybe this is it. Maybe that he's going to cure Jorah, and because of doing that, he's going to be kicked out of the Citadel, and then the part Jorah is going to play is going to be kind of like, you know, John's friend is healed. Danny, the person that Danny has a lot of affection for, and that's going to grease the wheels and allow John not have to bend the wheel or a knee or something like that. But
he's not going to break the wheel. He's going to bend the wheel.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I interject something that I just thought of?
Do it. That's what we're here for.
We had talked a lot about Dragonglass and its mystical properties, right? And maybe that being a potential cure for Grayscale. That seems to have gone right out the window. I don't think that Sam had any access to Dragonglass there in the Citadel.
You know why? It's obsidian. Like, why wouldn't he?
They made no mention of it. If he's got in that bowl that he's grinding up Dragonglass, they don't make any mention of it.
And the only reason I'm thinking of that is because I freeze-framed the shot of him reading the book and saw that on the other page they're talking about the medicinal qualities of obsidian. So that's a hint, but it's, you know, that's... And I guess as a part of George Martin's three-step reveal, that's the first step.
Okay,
Next week, Sam's like, hey, the secret's actually obsidian, or I don't know what the second step is.
Hey, Jorah, that dragon glass cure really worked, huh?
Right, or they show him, like, you know, take obsidian, and he's just pounded up, and Jorah's like, what is that shit anyway?
Yeah, it's the second dose.
Yeah, I guess the second part of a three-step Martin reveal would be, oh, it's just that's the active ingredient. And then the third part, they would actually tell you that it's fucking obsidian.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess it's not off the table, but it is.
Right.
Very well disguised.
It's certainly, it's like I don't have a problem from like how hard it would be to get your hand on obsidian, although they're making it out like obsidian is somewhat rare in at least Westeros.
Aside from Dragonstone, yeah,
exactly. So maybe because I'm thinking, like, you know, obsidian you can find all over the place. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's rare, but Jamie Lee, not sure if you guys already touched on this topic, but my coworkers and I are in a deep discussion, and my question is, if the White Walkers were once regular people, who do you think the Night King was before he was a White Walker? Is it possible that he's a Stark?
I don't think so. That happened way before.
Well,
the Starks,
so.
Right?
What's interesting is in the books, there's one of the many tales that old Nan tells Bran Stark to scare the shit out of him is the tale of the Night's King, which is not the Night King, it's the Night's King. And this is a legendary figure who was he was a Stark. He was a 13th Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. And he was looking out over the wall and he saw this corpse white, beautiful maiden with piercing blue eyes, and he fell in love with her and he had sex with her and they had babies, and he corrupted the Night's Watch and essentially enslaved them to go on this war against man and like the Stark at Winterfell and the King Beyond the Wall and some other dude had to all band together to defeat him. And that's one of the justifications they say that one of the interesting things about the Night's Watch is none of their castles south of the Wall, which is all their castles. I don't mean to imply they have castles north of the Wall. All their castles on the southern side of the Wall don't have walls except for the Wall.
Oh,
because the lords of Westeros were like, hey, we're never, you know, we want you to be completely defenseless against us in case you ever go rogue again. Now you got to ask yourself. Is this old Nan legend, is that germane to the plot of Game of Thrones? Have they done a good job of introducing the possibility that he might be a Stark? If he is a Stark, I mean, there's obviously interesting possibilities because that could be something. There could be something deep in the relationship between him and Bran. There could be more of like maybe he'll try to do some kind of seduction thing where he, you know, tries to explain things from his point of view, and Bran now is just weird enough from talking to trees all day that he can see, like, well, I'm starting to lose my grip on humanity. Maybe this is the way to go. I don't know. You got any thoughts on that?
No, I guess not. I was under the impression that the Starks were not quite as old at, like, they came from a branch of, like, the...
Oh, no, they're like, the guy who built the wall was a Stark. The guy who built Winterfell, Stark. But, same Stark, actually, Brandon the Builder.
Yeah, but why did he build the wall? I guess I was just under the impression that the Starks were not as old as the whites or the White Walkers.
Well, I mean, that's an unknowable thing too. Like, is because that's the you got to ask yourself is like, the last time the White Walkers came back during the Long Night, was that the first time, or did they come back another time and were defeated again? And this is just like some kind of thing that happens every 1,000 years because of reasons.
Well, the Children of the Forest, is that what they're called?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Made the White Walkers, right?
Well,
as a weapon to use against
in
the television
first show
men.
For sure. True. True. Oh yeah, you're right. In the show, that's settled. Yeah.
And I thought that the Starks were a line that came from the First Men.
Wouldn't
that imply that, like, I don't know.
Every Stark is a descendant of the First Men, but all descendants of the First Men are Starks.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
Okay. Yeah, good save on that, because you're right. They showed in the show that the Children of the Forest created them, so there was no other time before.
I don't know.
Like I said, it's a common theory. There's a lot of interesting angles about like the fact that this guy would be literally related to John. Like, they have to introduce some way for them to talk and have a discussion, which I think they kind of need to anyway to them to avoid the fact that they're just going to be a purely malevolent force, which is not something that Martin usually traffics in. Cersei is kind of despicable. She's got a bat. You can kind of pity her. You know, she's born with an identical twin brother who's able to do all these things and was going to eventually be the Warden of the West. And the only reason, even though she was born before him, the only reason she's not that is because she doesn't have a penis.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets married, she gets traded like a horse to Robert Baratheon, and he's a fucking dick and he doesn't love her. And he's in love with this dead woman. And he abuses her and is cruel to her. And, you know, she's got a backstory is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
She's got some things that make her sympathetic, even though she's still regrettable.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, the very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for podcasts that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Uh, Moving on, Ryan K., longtime listener, first time sender feedback. I had to send my thoughts on Euron. As a book reader, seeing Yara in the hands of that madman gave me a fear in the pit of my stomach. Do you think the Double D's will use the words from the Forsaken preview chapter of Winds of Winter to further show who Euron is?
What are those words?
So I mentioned last week that reading the Forsaken is kind of like set, that this is a chapter in Winds of Winter from Aaron Damphairs. I know you love his name so much.
Love it, yeah. Good nickname,
He's one of Euron's brothers. He's the high priest of the Drowned Men, and he's been taken prisoner, and he's held in this hellish conditions where, like, he's in some kind of cave that's chained up, and the tide comes in, and it washes up to his, like, upper body, and Wyatt's, and his feet are ruined, and he's very malnutritionish.
Damp feet instead.
It's just damp feet. And there's rats crawling over him, and this Euron is, like, you know, torturing him, and then pouring, like, LSD, like some kind of, like, it's not LSD, it's right. The nightshade of the warlocks that makes him hallucinate all this crazy shit, and Euron takes a young woman and uses her to betray his family, and then he gets her pregnant, and then he lashes her as a figurehead to the front of his boat while she's, I mean, it's some repugnant shit. It's like fucking Bolton's on steroids. Mm-hmm. So if I take the pulse of the community and I include all, I feel like that there's very little appetite for just that kind of cruelty for the sake of cruelty, torture porn in Game of Thrones, especially at this late hour. So what, I mean, you might be a better one to answer this, because you're more of the speak for the common fan. What would you think about, like, an extended 3 or 4 episode torture arc with Euron and some men or women?
I will say I don't think the show is afraid to go there if it feels it wants to.
Right. True.
I mean, the stuff we saw with Theon was pretty bad.
Yep.
The stuff we saw with Sansa was pretty bad.
Yep.
I would say they will go there if they feel necessary. Feel it necessary. I think they've done enough for, you know, your standard show to set up that this is the bad guy. Like, right. Euron is a very, very bad guy. Just from that one battle alone, right? The lengths he's been willing to go to get some kind of revenge on
Yara.
And
it was bloody, and they're ripping people's tongues out, and they're dismembering them, and, like, I feel like you got an idea of the type of dude he is.
Yeah. Now, it just depends on how far they want to go with it. I don't think I need any more to know that Euron is a really, really bad guy.
Right.
Even just his attitude toward everything has been, you know, very, like, there's something about that weird detached feeling he has about everything, where he's just like, oh, yeah, I'll just go through life this way, and it'll all work out for me because I'm a badass and I rip people's tongues out.
Right.
They've done enough on that. So I don't need it, but I could totally see the show going there.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's like, how much of that do you want to have? And, like, because the thing is, like, the thing about shock stuff is if you do it over and over and over again, it's not shocking.
Yeah.
And then it serves no narrative purpose. So then it's like, is this an audience of gorehounds? Is this an audience of people that like to watch torture? Or is it shocking and effective because it instantly makes, I just feel like the show's already kind of, you know, treading that, like, you know, certainly it traffics in blood and gore, but torturing people that we like or that we have affection for, I don't know what more narrative juice they could squeeze out of that.
And I feel like they already did the, you know, lashing it to the front of the boat,
yeah,
sort of thing with the sand
Obara
snakes.
And the other sand snakes hung from their own
weapons. Yeah, maybe they don't go there. Uh-huh. And, you know, I maybe it's enough. Maybe they've done enough.
Okay.
For me, they certainly have.
Brett K. has a question that I somewhat frequently get. Why is no one talking about Willis Tyrell? He's talked about on the show when Marjorie is suggesting to Sansa that she should move to Highgarden to marry him. He's rumored to be crippled and unable to leave Highgarden, so he would not have been at the Sept when it went boom. Unless I missed something, Big Lady Olenna is not the last Tyrell.
Okay.
Well, you have missed something, the fact that Willis has been cut from the show.
Yes.
So there was, like, in the first, I think in the first or maybe the second season Blu-rays, they had, and then, like, some of the show material on their website, they had all these different family trees. Mm-hmm. And they showed Willis as being one of the brothers of Loras and Marjorie Tyrell. And in the books, In the books, when it's mentioned that Sansa would marry a Tyrell, she gets briefly excited, like, oh my god, Loras, oh, this would be a dream come true. Get away from Joffrey and marry this, like, knight that I've been in love with. And Marjorie's like, oh no, it's Willis. You know, he's crippled, but, you know, he's very kind and he's nice, and I'm sure you'll get along and we'll be able to be sisters. It'll be awesome. Mm-hmm. So in the show, I think you also got it wrong, Brett, that they actually just said, suggested that it was going to be Loras and Sansa.
Okay.
They never mentioned this Willis guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't remember Willis at all.
And again, the thing that I always come back to is that Lady Olenna on the show has said that she has no heirs and she's too old to make one at this point. So
yeah.
Whatever, like, conspiracy theory you want to weave, do you know more about Lady Olenna's genealogy than she does?
That's a fair question.
So
yeah.
She believes all of her heirs and descendants are dead, and that's good enough for me. Now, you know, some people might ask themselves, well, what if there's going to be some secret tyrant? And I'm like, okay, whatever, you know, because the show invites you to think, as you got glamours and you've got shapeshifter magic and you've got people pretending to be other people and you got face swapping stuff and you've got secret Targaryens. Like, it gives you the machinery to do all this crazy stuff. The question is, as always, are they going to go with a secret Tyrell plot? Is that important to the Song of Ice and Fire?
It doesn't seem to be at this
doesn't
point
seem
in
to
the
me
show.
Either. That's that's how I kind of either dismiss or get excited about theories. Brittany K, one listener expressed concerns about not being able to reconcile Varys organizing a hit on Dany while supposedly being a Targaryen loyalist. While you guys came up with some great explanations, I have another one that's more meta than textual. In the first season, it's likely the Double D's were still intending on doing the Fagon storyline. If that's the case, then Varys' actions make more sense because he was clearing the way for the young Griff Fagon to become the only Targaryen in play. Since that plot was dropped completely, the assassination is a weird minor plot hole.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know much about that plot.
So that's we talked about it, like the fact that Varys was conspiring with Illyrio, and there's a whole bunch of theory crafting behind how long they've been working together and their relationship, which I delved into. If you didn't know this, I have anything that I do a deep dive on a big theory, and I've done like over 24. There's a spoiler archive that's hot linked in every one of these spoiler podcasts. Where you can go click on it, it takes you to a forum post where I have actually show the link that you need to click on to get to the podcast and the time code. But I did a pretty deep dive on Varys and Illyrio and what they're up to. But long story short, Aegon is possibly one of Rhaegar Targaryen's children. Supposedly he got his head smashed in by the Mountain. But there's a theory that he was spirited away from King's Landing, the Dark of Night, and across the Narrow Sea, and he was put in the Golden Company, which was a sellsword company founded by a bunch of offshoot Targaryens a long time ago, and that they've been secretly training him to be the perfect king to land. And then he actually lands in Westeros and starts conquering at the end of Dance of Dragons. However, all that stuff that connected to the Martells and the Dorne, that stuff's all been cut and simplified. There's very little evidence that that's there. But just like I said, that they might have, like with Sam's horn, that might be one of those like vestigial tail type of things. Like that I think Brittany's right. It could be one of those too. But I also thought we had some pretty good explanations for it. Alex G, where are my ice spiders? My fiance is afraid of spiders, and many people are. The Double D's have to use this, right? So in the books, another story that old Nan would tell to make Bran Stark shit his pants is, like, you know, she went on and on about, like, snows would fall the height of castle walls, and women would eat the breast at the babe, because they're starving so much. And then the White Walkers would come, and she described them as riding enormous ice spiders. And that's a super cool visual. But I felt like the time to show them riding an ice spider would have been like maybe the start of the season.
That opening shot, you know, giants, ice spiders, that's pretty scary.
Like, and then they are also like, that was also like the idea that they got these giants, like that would have been like, I feel like, where do you come down on the idea of an ice dragon? Like, either a dragon that's another species or a white type of dragon that they've resurrected and it blows ice instead of fire. Do you think that's something?
I think we have seen the extent of what the
the White Walker's army.
The White Walker's army consists of, yeah. Now that we've seen the giants, which are just, you know, this natural, oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, from, if there's a thing, they can raise the dead,
yeah.
So that's
a dragon is like a perfect fit with that.
Yeah.
Because we know that, you know, the Targaryens had a shitload of dragons at one point.
And Dany's got three of them, which we already are introduced a way to murder them this episode. It's highly unlikely all three of the dragons are going to make it out of the series.
Right. And it's possible with as long as these White Walkers have been around that they've just had a dragon.
Sure.
Back in the day, you know?
Right. Like, they can have a zombie form of anything that we've seen alive.
Right.
Which is... Now
we haven't seen any spiders.
A couple other things I saw about, like, what... You know, that we were introduced to bones of dragons in Winterfell. Uh-huh. Do you think that the Night King can resurrect a bone dragon?
I don't think so, no.
I don't either, because it's
fucking skeletons, though. Like, those ones that killed Jojen...
Yeah,
we're pretty fucking skeletons.
But do they have the whole skeletons, or just the skull? And if they have the whole skeletons,
I saw a bunch of bones.
Did
in
they?
There.
It did they like... reassemble themselves like fucking the Iron Giant? Like you've got.
It's gonna be like a. Oh, well, this is what we think the T-Rex looks like, so we put the bones together this way. There's gonna be some fucked up dragons out there.
Right, right. They're actually warm blooded and they're covered in feathers.
Right.
And the depiction on Game of Thrones is inaccurate. And I was just thinking, like, if these bones are all over, like, there's, you know, maybe there's a museum case in Old Town that's got like one of the Balerion's thigh bone in it or something.
Right,
just gonna smash out of the case, start rolling downstairs and flipping end over end towards.
I can't see that.
Yeah, I don't like, either.
I think I wish they hadn't shown like really skeletony, like Army of Darkness type.
Oh, that's true.
Figures.
There's
when they killed Jojen, because I would say like there has to be a certain amount of meat on them bones to bring them back. But I don't know if that's true.
Yeah. Well,
how long dead can they be?
Yeah. Like, does the bones have to be at least articulate? Because I've always thought that there's at least a little gristle to those bones. Like, I've never seen just like a skeleton, like a true Army of Darkness style skeleton. They've always had like some mummified scraps of skin. And
it's true. Yeah.
So, but the other thing, it makes sense that like if a white was resurrected as a dragon, or a dragon was resurrected as white, it would be ice instead of fire. Because imagine like it just set it, as soon as it roared, it set itself on fire.
Right.
And the Night King's like, well, shit. I guess I should have seen that coming.
Yep.
I don't know. But yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think ice spiders would be super cool. It's not one of those things where I would be like, or any of the audience would be like, throw a fit if they showed up. But,
sure.
And maybe that's the best argument for them. They're super cool, and no one's really going to be like, fucking ice spiders? Like, at least I wouldn't. Jared G, question I have wondered when I was watching Stormborn, maybe you've already addressed it, but does Melisandre's necklace provide any powers beyond longevity? For instance, if Davos shows up with Jon at Dragonstone and he tells everyone that she burned a little girl, do they kill her, or at least attempt to, and find out her necklace has special powers? Or is that necklace just something thrown in the story to gross us out at the thought of her trying to seduce Jon and successfully seducing Stannis? In the books, it very strongly implies that there is something magical about these rubies. That like she, in the book, she burns Mance Rayder alive, but they actually swap out Rattleshirt, the Lord of Bones. She actually glamors him with like some kind of wrist thing that's got a ruby on it that makes him look like Mance.
Right.
And then like there's also talks about like the ruby at her throat kind of twinkling or flashing when she does particular kind of like the dude in Mike Tyson's Punch Out before he does his tiger punch. he always got that weird telegraph with this glowing ruby. but in the show, I don't think I've seen anything where they show her imbuing something with power so she can affect it at a distance or whatever.
I'm really curious to see what happens when her and John meet back up.
She
might just be like, Danny, look, like, John's a good guy, but I gotta go.
Right.
I gotta get out of here, because he's not gonna like this.
This Davos guy said he was going to kill me if he saw. He's crazy.
Yeah.
I also, why do you think they showed Melisandre as an old woman? Because that was something, like, a deep cut from the books, and it's like, I guess it's a little bit of world building, or like, blow your mind, it's this beautiful woman, she's actually old and ugly, what do you think of that, dudes? But I wonder if it's actually going to be relevant to the plot.
Yeah, there might be another layer. Like, maybe she's seen some shit that, a lot of other people haven't because they haven't been around as long.
I mean, she divulged a little bit of the other backstory, which I think was a book point, only point that, you know, she was a slave, and, you know, she came out of the slave shops and of Slave Shop Bay and slave. I wonder if there's something going to be more to that, because it was, if not, it's kind of a cool world building, or like things are, I mean,
yeah,
that's neat. I don't need it to mean anything or to explain anything, but I wonder if we'll ever see her doing that again. Like if she dies, will she turn into an old woman?
I don't know.
She like do a Yoda and just disappears. All right. Sean McGee, Targaryens have silver white hair to the point that people often speculate on Tyrion being a secret Targaryen just based on how he's described. But they're also dark haired Targaryens. They're very rare, and they all have bright eyes, such as purple or blue, and Jon has dark hair and dark gray eyes. Any thoughts on how this works, considering we know that he's a Targaryen, other than he's the exception to the rule? Is there something symbolic about what that we should be taking note of?
That's a good question. I don't know.
It is a good question, an interesting question, because on the one hand, you know, he's half Targaryen, half Stark, and his mother was very dark featured. She's the classic, you know, Stark.
Okay. Yeah.
But then also in the show and the books, they make this big point about the seed is strong and the primary evidence about all these, you know, that the Lannisters are illegitimate bastard children is that they're all blonde-haired and Robert Baratheon is black-haired or brown-haired. So, I mean, I wouldn't think a thing of it. Like, you know, two blondes can have a brunette. It's not especially if one of them's a brunette. It's actually much more common for them to be brunette than blonde. And, you know, like platinum is about as blonde as you can get. So I guess I have no problem with this the way it would work out genetically. But you're right. In this world, the genetics don't work the way they do in the real world. So I don't know. Symbolic? Like, if anything, Dany seems to be the dark one. So is it going to be like an invert, like the white cowboy hat, black cowboy hat, that he's going to be the good guy even though he's dark, and she's going to be the bad guy even though she's associated with lighter, whiter stuff?
Man, I have no speculation on this. Hair color is not my forte when it comes to speculation.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, I think that there is room for you to make an argument that it's going to be significant, and there's room for you to make an argument that it's not.
Yeah.
Because there's kind of contradictory and imperfect understanding about the way this stuff works in the books and the shows. All right, final one. This is pretty interesting, too. Christopher A., in The Hedge Knight, Dunk and Egg travel to Attorney at Ashford. So this
I say something up front?
Yes.
I always thought that Dunk and Egg was one person. Duncan Egg.
No.
I just today, when I was listening to you watching a video, realized that it was Dunk and Egg.
Dunk and Egg. Yeah, it's Sir Duncan
the Tall. And that makes so much more sense to me now.
And King, eventual King Aegon.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Anyway, The Hedge Knight, talks about Sir Duncan and Aegon. They travel to a tourney at Ashford. There are five champions competing for the hand of Lady Ashford, a young maid. Here are their names in order. Lionel Baratheon, Leo Tyrell, Tybalt Lannister, Humphrey Harding, and Prince Valar Targaryen. Interestingly, this order matches exactly those linked with Sansa in the books. Joffrey, who is, of course, a Baratheon. Loras, who is a Tyrell, Tyrion, who is a Lannister, and Harry Harding in the books is the latest one that she's going to be married off to. Given the R plus L equals J, I believe the fifth name, the Targaryen, is alluding to Jon and Sansa ending up together. Is it finally time to give some props to this fan theory on the podcast? So.
Interesting.
That's the case for, I'm going to lay out the case against. Joffrey's not a Baratheon.
That's true. He's a
Lannister. So you have to. This is another word. Is the prophecy playing straight, or is it going to put an R? Is Arya going to put on a Jaime face to make it true? The secondly is, I believe that the Tyrell and Lannisters order is reversed there. So like the order is not perfect. However, and Alt Shift X does a great video on this. By the way, if you go to his channel, if you search for Alt Shift X, who will Sansa marry? It's the first Google result you'll find.
Cool.
He actually breaks this down, and the other problem he had with it, or the reason he thinks there's something to it, is that House Harding is such an obscure house. I don't think we've heard them in any other context. That if you allow the Joffrey thing, if you're not too cared about the order, it is kind of compelling that, you know, to the extent that George likes playing with these foreshadowings and these not prophetic hints, but these, you know, greater and lesser fulfillments of things. The fact that these suitors for this princess were all of these houses that correspond exactly to the people who have courted and married Sansa is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I still think it's a bit icky that her and Jon would get married, though.
Yeah, being cousins?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not the fact that they're cousins, because like, even the Targaryens married their sister because that's what they do in their culture. It's more of like the fact they were raised as brother and sister and they think of themselves as brother and sister.
Right.
That's what would be like, you know, well, I know you're my sister, but for the good of the realm, we must fuck. I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah.
But he pointed, Alt Shift X pointed out in his video that in a very early draft, like I guess George has released an outline of how the original trilogy of Game of Thrones is supposed to go.
Hmm.
Jon actually marries Arya.
Okay.
Which, with we know about their relationship in the show and in the books, that's super fucking weird and creepy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like George can go there.
Huh.
I would never say that he can't. I'm just saying that it's more like, I don't know. I don't know. This guy, because this stuff is pretty compelling.
I feel like anytime the numbers of royalty are thinned, things start to get real icky in the space.
Well,
because
that's, yeah.
You can only marry another lord or another royal something, right. Another nobleman or woman.
It does fuck up the bloodline for sure.
Yeah, things get real weird, and we've had a lot of thinning of the noble lines as of late.
The obsession with the pure bloodline leads to bad effects to your genetics, let's put it that way. And you know, that's another thing is like Targaryens don't have like a history of being insane. Like Aegon the Conqueror was all around great. Yeah, he kicked in Westeros's ass, but he actually did a lot of great things. And he unified the realm and
had it coming.
And yeah, the Westeros had it coming. And his son was a pretty good king. And then there was a guy like Maegor, which I think was a bad one. But then they had this. I think the first Jaehaerys like ruled for like 60 some years, and it was a very, very, very peaceful and beneficial realm.
Hmm.
You could argue that what happened is the Targaryens, since they went from all of Valyria that they could fuck to just, you know, Aegon and his two sisters, and they kept up that kind of sister wife tradition, that the reason you had a mad king is because their genetics just are terrible.
Yeah.
They got literally crazy, sickly people that are prone to disease and insanity sitting on the thrones.
Hmm.
Don't fuck your brothers and sisters, people.
Yeah,
it's not
avoid
a good,
it if possible.
It's not a good idea. I know everybody wants to. It's you know super fucking hot to think about. I know there's a huge category.
Jesus.
I know on Pornhub that's a huge category and everybody likes browsing that. But it's just not a good idea. It's not a good idea. Need Bill Nye the Science Guy to do a segment about brother sister fucking and Punnett squares and hereditary disease and all that stuff to set people straight. All right, I was done like 3 minutes ago. Should have been. Maybe we'll cut this. Who knows? If you'd like to send in something with, and again, it was a bloodbath and feedback because I shied away from almost all speculation because this is a real bummer. These production leaks, God damn it, it's fucking with us and fucking with our fun in the spoiler section, but. I'd rather take the time to get a process that will have a result where I can guarantee that leaks are not going to get out into our spoiler podcast than to try to do my best judgment where I don't even have a reference to judge. So
yeah,
next week, hopefully we'll have a little bit more. Also shame on the people trying to fool me. Shame. Ding, ding. You guys, I asked you not to, and you did it anyway, and now this is happening. So, but you can send in your stuff that you want to talk about, questions about the lore, theories that you want to talk about, speculation to gamethrones@baldmove.com. You can also, of course, follow us along with everything that we do at baldmove.com. We also have social media at facebook.com/baldmove and @baldmove on Instagram and Twitter. Just a couple more days, we'll have a new episode out, a new instant guest.
No, it's a steady stream of Game of Thrones content.
And like 2 weeks from now, halfway through the Game of Thrones episode, we'll be at the halfway point.
Right.
And that's crazy.
It is.
So savor it. Try to. I know everybody's impatient to watch it, and that explains the leaking. But try to savor it. Try to savor it. There's not much left of Game of Thrones. It's been a remarkable show. Mm-hmm. Let's enjoy it while it lasts. We'll be back for all three of our coverage of podcasts next week with the instant take, the full cast on Tuesday, and the spoiler edition on Friday. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See you later.